afternoon. Welcome to Two Way Talk here on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm Anthony McCarthy. My co-host, Kara Williams, is dealing with the loss of her brother who died over the weekend. She'll be back very soon. Let's send her lots of positive energy and our love. We miss you and we're thinking about you, Kara. Deborah Bennett Austin is the co-founder of Change Comes Now, which is a grassroots advocacy organization that helps incarcerated and formerly incarcerated women and girls in Florida. This weekend, there was a story in the New York Times, and it was entitled, "It Costs $53,000 to Vote." It was fascinating. As I read it, so many laws, so many things put up to keep the formerly incarcerated and the incarcerated from voting. It is a concentrated effort to disenfranchise. And as I thought about what they were doing to the incarcerated, I thought about what is happening all over this country as they begin to institute laws to take away the rights of people to vote, to make it difficult for them to vote. You can't have water in the line as you wait. You can only have drop-off lines or drop-off boxes in heavily white populations. This is should be a point of concern for so many people. We're going to begin this conversation today with Deborah Bennett Austin, and then we're going to continue this conversation as we get ready for votes here in Maryland. Next year, our legislature has done the exact opposite. How many ways can you vote? How many ways can they give you the right to vote? How many different ways can they make it possible for people to vote? Other states are doing the exact opposite of that. Deborah Bennett Austin, welcome to Two Way Talk.
Thank you so much for having me. This is an absolute honor. Thank you.
It's great to have you. And I have to tell you, that story in the New York Times really woke me up. The very name, it cost $53,000 to vote. And I was sitting there, and when I saw it, I was like, what in the world is this all about? It doesn't cost to vote. And boy, did they lay it out. Now, Can
you
discuss the article? A lot of our listeners may not have seen it. If you could put it in context for us and explain the article to us.
Sure. Basically, here in the state of Florida, they want there to just be one way to vote. They want you to be white. They want you to be privileged. And they want you to march on down and vote for anybody that's on the red side, anybody that is Republican.
Mm-hmm.
We have about 100,000 incarcerated persons here in the state of Florida. So if you take that 100,000 persons and add their friends and their family, their now grown children, their neighbors, I mean, there's a lot of people in the state of Florida that are impacted by incarceration. So somebody that's impacted by incarceration in one way or another, we tend to know more of what laws are not really working for the state of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to know things that maybe somebody that's just voting for, who their neighbor's voting for, they're not aware of. But if you're a convicted felon in Florida, you're going to pay to vote. And where $53,000 was shocking to some, it's even more money for some people. Depending on what their court costs and their fines and or restitution are,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you could be looking at people that have hundreds of thousands of dollars to pay before they can vote. And
now,
it shouldn't be like that.
It shouldn't be that way. Deborah, who were the people that were featured in this article? Could you give us some of the people and their stories who were featured in the article? And folks, when she talks about hundreds of thousands of dollars to vote, the legislature has now determined that all restitution must be paid before you can vote. And the restitution really is really dependent upon, and I'm not trying to dismiss anything, and I'm not trying to belittle anything, but the restitution really is based upon what white privileged decision makers decide someone who has been incarcerated have to pay back. And
correct.
It is sometimes it would take a lifetime for these individuals to come up with that kind of money, to vote, to reestablish their constitutional right to vote. So, Deborah, tell folks, I encourage you to go online, download this article and read it. Some of the most interesting, colorful, determined men and women in the country, in Florida, determined they're going to get their right to vote back. Do you remember some of the people who were profiled, Deborah?
Yes, sir, I do. Everybody that was profiled is a convicted felon,
mm-hmm.
And had fines and fees assessed to them, which prevented them from voting. Some of the people that I referred to the article, number one, my spouse.
Uh-huh.
So my wife, which would be Anisha Austin, she did 27 years in prison.
Mm-hmm.
So that was her punishment. That was the price she had to pay. Or her crime was to be removed from society for 27 years. So she came home, and she's been home for about 2 years, doing great and no problems. She's no longer on probation, but she still cannot attain a voter registration card because she owes fines and fees.
Mm-hmm.
I also sent them Raquel Wade and Krista Thompson. So those are both women from the Florida Department of Correction. They're released now. They've done their punishment. They've done what they were ordered by the courts to do.
That's right.
But when we get released, it continues to follow us. So if you're coming home and trying to do the right thing, and you were a member of society, we're taxpayers, we're paying taxes on everything. We're paying taxes on stuff when we're incarcerated. Mm. We go to canteen, we pay taxes.
Phew.
But you want to be a member of society, and we're constantly reminded of the separation that we're not a member of society.
Mm-hmm.
I did not pledge my allegiance to any other country when I went to prison. I was still an American. I was still proud to be. But when I come home, I had to, upon my release, I went to get my driver's license. And my now grown little girl took me to get it. And I was informed that I could not get my driver's license. So it doesn't just affect your vote to write. It affects you, your ability to even drive a car legally in the state of Florida.
Wow.
So I had to go sign up for a payment plan because, mm-hmm. of course, I'm coming out of prison after 19 years. We don't get paid to work in prison in Florida in the state system. You just do that slave labor every day. There is no, you don't get paid for it. So I didn't have any money to pay to do anything like that. So I have my child who's now grown helping me.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to get on a payment plan, and you even have to pay for that payment
to
plan.
Be on the payment plan. That's right.
Yeah. It's money all day long. Prison in Florida is big business.
And wow.
We wouldn't have the leaders. We would not have the elected people that we have in Florida if it was a true country, a true state, and really everybody's vote counted. Because if it did, Florida would be completely revamped. It would not be the way that it is. If everybody's vote counted, no matter what your skin color was, no matter what mistakes you made in your past, no matter what's in your wallet, we would not have the leaders that we have in place, in office, on this day in Florida if we had fair voting. But we don't. Mm.
Deborah Bennett Austin, I have to tell you something. I think that you are a champion. You are a humanitarian. You are Wonder Woman. I think as I was reading your story, and I want you to share it with my listeners, but before you do that, I just have to say I was almost moved to tears by your wife's story as well. But explain to our listeners who are sitting there scratching their head, how in the world could it cost $53,000 to vote? Explain where that concept comes from.
That comes from, okay, like for instance for me, I had a trafficking charge. I was sentenced in early 2000. So all of the years that I sat in prison, my just few thousand dollars of, mm-hmm. court costs and fines and fees or whatever, it all accumulates interest year after year after year after year. So that when you come home, the interest is tenfold what the original principal amount of your court costs were. And there's no disputing it. There's no settlement. There's no, hey, can I maybe just pay this? You're going to pay all of it. And until you pay all of it, you're not going to get a driver's license and you're not going to vote. Mm. And that's just, and if there's a way for our current governor to switch around and switch Amendment 4, then he's going to. Because Amendment 4 is the only reason why I, to this day, hold a voter registration card.
Wow.
And it makes no sense that me, even though I'm white, so I would have to have white privilege at some point in my life, mm-hmm. but I felt the need to register as a Republican just so I felt if I could ever get in the right
That's
area
right.
at the right table, they would listen to me because they would be misled to think that I'm on their side.
Mm-hmm.
I'm white privilege, I'm an older woman, and I'm a Republican. Just so I could get at the table and then put it out there what it really is. but that is the way Florida is. If every vote really counted, and when I say counted, I mean everybody that wants to vote.
Mm-hmm.
Can vote. I mean,
is allowed to vote. Inside,
yeah, you can sit in a prison cell or a jail cell in Maine or Vermont and cast your vote. And your vote matters.
Mm-hmm.
But in Florida, if you've ever even touched the door of a prison cell or a county jail cell, you are going to pay to get your vote. And that's not fair. If I were running for office, I would want every single person to vote.
Yes,
I would want
of course.
Every person in the state to vote. And I wouldn't expect everybody to vote for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I would want the fair person to win. I would want the person with the most votes to win. I wouldn't want to choose and pick everybody that got to vote so that I could then win and feel like I had accomplished something. I would feel like I was still a loser.
Mm. So, folks, I want you to call in and join this conversation. As I said, the disenfranchisement of not just the incarcerated, but people of color, of women, it really is, our democracy is at stake. And we have got to wake up and we have got to force our elected leaders who are there because of us. We've got to force them to do the right thing. And 410-319-8888. When I watch these rallies for the former president, you know what? If you support the former president, you've heard me say it a million times, good for you. I'm glad you have the right to support whomever you want to support. But if you listen to the words, if you listen to the hateful speech, if you listen to them talking about disenfranchising voters, shutting them down in places where brown and black people are voting. And so if you're voting for a Democrat, you're wrong, and they're going to take your votes away, they're going to shut you down, and they are going to change how democracy is defined in this country. 410-319-8888. My guest for this hour is Deborah Bennett Austin, the co-founder of Change Comes Now. And she's going to explain that organization to us here in a moment. Let's go to the phones. The phone lines are lighting up. People want to get in on these conversations. Doc Cheatham, he is on the line. He helped form the voting legislation in Florida.
Deborah Bennett Austin, it's a pleasure to hear your voice. I don't want to say what year it was. It was either 2007 or 2008,
mm-hmm.
I was flown into Florida. I was housed into a nice hotel there, and I shared with the residents, majority, 80-90%, were former felons that had gotten out of corrections, both men and women, in Florida. And I had shared with them the organization that I founded here in Maryland, which was the Maryland Voting Rights Restoration Coalition. What I did find in coming down to Florida and encouraged the citizens in Florida to at least attempt to do some of the things we had attempted to do, but I would have to say I did not experience any other state more critical in taking away people's voting rights. You know, including I met with barbers who lost their barber's license. I spoke to plumbers who lost their plumber's license. So I want to encourage you to keep doing what you're doing. Maryland is also a tough state. It was one of the last states to give blacks the right to vote, one of the last states to give women the right to vote, and one of the last states to give former felons the right to vote. Do not give up. Keep fighting. There are folks in other states that are really encouraged by what you're doing, but I want to commend you for what you've done. But I'm honored to say that the good citizens of Florida flew me there, put me in a hotel, and then I shared with them how I formed my group. And that's how, I don't know what it's called today or whether or not it's still active, but it was a group called the Florida Rights Group. It was more than just voting rights. They were losing all kind of rights. Plumbers, electricians, by them having been former felons. So please keep doing what you're doing. There are folks, especially here in Maryland, I encourage you to keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you, Doc Cheatham, and thank you for all that you've done for not just felons, but for civil and human rights in our state, in this country. You, too, are a champion. I'm so honored that you're even listening, let alone calling in this program.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Now, like I said, we have a lot of folks on the line. We're going to get to you, so please hold on. I want to give Deborah Bennett Austin a moment to tell us about Change Comes Now. Why did you found this organization, and what is the mission of your organization?
I came home from prison 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, mm-hmm. and didn't really have a safe spot to talk about how I was feeling. You know, people look at you differently when you say that you're formerly incarcerated, uh-huh. and I didn't want to have to keep it a secret. So we started a little Facebook page called Soldiers on the Inside of Force on the Outside. We've got about almost 5,000 women on there. So these are all formerly incarcerated from the state of Florida women. So we do a lot of protesting, different things like that, and we just decided to make it official, become a nonprofit. And a lot of the fundraising that we did for COVID, we just said change is now. Mm-hmm. So in becoming a nonprofit, we call it Change Comes Now. So our mission is we want to change these rules that we've got in the state of Florida. We see no reason to have 8,000 women imprisoned in the state of Florida. No reason at all. We've got some of the highest numbers for incarcerated women and men, yet our recidivism rate is insane. So what we're doing, what the lawmakers are doing, they're not successful.
Mm-hmm.
We started out just protesting, which is where my heart is. I love to protest. We protest at the prisons where the abuse occurs. I don't know if any of the listeners are familiar with the name Cheryl Wymar. Cheryl Wymar was a 51-year-old woman that was handicapped, and in August it was 2 years, staff members at Lowell Correctional beat her so badly, she is forever going to be a quadriplegic. So we started protesting at the prison. So we, of course, became an enemy to DOC, FDLE, the governor, all of them. They did not like us. And then COVID came. So we took the same women. It's all still just us. And we tried to get the state of Florida to donate masks for the incarcerated population because they're more at risk. And it's just like a nursing home.
Yep.
They're as susceptible as an elderly person in a nursing home would be. We got no response. So we, all of us, just incarcerated women, we donated PPE masks to all 8,000 of our women, hand sanitizer for the staff. We kicked in toilet paper. The prisons kind of let their guard down with us, and we were able to donate style antibacterial soap, shampoo, toothbrushes, toothpaste, sanitary napkins, numerous times since COVID has begun. We actually go back into one of the prisons now, and we participate in their reentry fair, where we sit down and we meet with all of the women that are getting ready to come home, like for this fiscal year, and try to find out what their needs are so that we can hopefully do some fundraising and try to meet their needs. We're currently doing a big project where we'll be donating items to that same prison for Christmas. So everything in prison is blue and white. So it might not be a big deal to the listeners, and it might sound kind of trivial, but like we've got 1,300 soft pink washcloths, and we've got 1,300 little rubber bracelets that say "Change Comes Now" both sides of the fence, and we've got so far 600 bottles of body wash. So we're trying to raise money to buy the remaining 700, and then we'll move on to something like eyeshadow palettes. Mm-hmm. Because really, at the end of the day, these are women and girls, these are mothers, and they're the same exact person. They're just sleeping in a different place. It doesn't mean that we dehumanize them.
Of course.
It doesn't mean that they should be devalued. So we're just trying to push in something to the one prison that will let us, you know, to make their Christmas Day a special day.
Mm.
But we're just trying to educate everybody. In Florida, in so many parts of Florida, you can just park your car for a second and you're going to see Porsche, Bentley, Mercedes just constantly passing you. But then you're also going to see people sleeping on a bench.
Yeah.
It should not, we shouldn't have a super high and a super low. Everybody needs to come together so that we can have a nice meeting in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need people sleeping on benches. Mm. We are trying to educate everybody that it's just because you're in prison or in the county jail, you're still a part of our community.
It's
supposed to matter.
Mm-hmm. I want to invite our listeners to join our conversation. You know that the voting rights have been restored for felons in Maryland. A lot of hard work went into restoring these voting rights, and still so few felons are voting. If you are a felon and you exercising your right to vote, once you were given that right again, call us at 410-319-8888. If you are a woman who's been incarcerated, if you're in Florida and you're listening to us online, please share your story with us. What is happening now in this country? People are being forced to pay to have their rights restored, to have their voting rights restored, to be able to get a license, to be able to get ID. They have got to pay these extraordinary fines and fees to be given the rights that so many of us take for granted. So I want to hear from you. I want to hear what you're going to do to be in this fight for all citizens of this country. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Tavon. Tavon, welcome to Two-Way Talk.
Yes. I was listening to the lady. She's from Florida. And one thing I remember about Florida when back when the election was going on with Trump and the governors and all that.
Uh-huh.
It's a third-degree felony to release a helium balloon.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
So just imagine how many people that have felonies that never even been to prison. I mean, there is a fine of up to $5,000 or 5 years imprisonment, but the vast majority of people don't go to prison for releasing helium balloons, but if they're convicted, they're now felons.
They're felons.
So, so a lot of people should need to understand there's a distinction between, you know, certain levels of crime which constitute the person as a felon. So, but now I have a question.
Tavon, I'm going to ask you to hold on because we're up against the clock. I got to take a break, and when we come back, you can ask your question. Damon, all the other callers, please hold on. Deborah Bennett Austin is with us. She's the co-founder of Change Comes Now. You're listening to Two-Way Talk. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Two-Way Talk. I'm Anthony McCarthy. Deborah Bennett Austin is the co-founder of Change Comes Now. There was a story this weekend in the New York Times, and it intrigued me. It said, when it cost $53,000 to vote. And I could not understand why they were equating voting with $53,000. Then you read the horror stories of the Florida government and its disenfranchisement of formerly incarcerated and incarcerated individuals. And you realize that it is all about lining the pockets of the government and disenfranchising American citizens. Everybody has the potential to make a mistake. But should you be punished for the rest of your life because of that mistake? And many times these fines have become hundreds of thousands of dollars. Deborah Bennett Austin, co-founder of Change Comes Now. Let's go back to Tavon and let him finish his question for you. Tavon, thank you for calling. I always enjoy when you call because I always know you have something important to say.
Oh, well, thank you. Not even my wife and kids don't even think that much. I appreciate it. But now I have a question. Now, I will say this as a disclaimer. My father was in prison for 17 and a half years.
Mm.
I have plenty of family members and friends that's been in prison over the years, in and out, for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as paying the $53,000, I think that's a bit extreme. But is it that bad that they have to pay something, considering I'm a law-abiding citizen that I have to pay taxes on the outside, which, in a sense, pays for them to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So is it all fair? And I agree with what she's saying. It can be the system is set up for these people, the recidivism rate to continue.
Of course.
Because it's a for-profit business, mm-hmm. which it shouldn't be. They should abolish that altogether. So I understand it from that standpoint, but is it all wrong to make them pay something to at least earn their right back into, you know, the regular population, so mm-hmm. for the lack of better terms. I mean, I don't think it's all bad. The amount they're expecting people to pay might be a bit extreme, and especially if you're charging them interest, and then they come out and they can't get driver's license, like they can't function in regular life.
That's
so
right.
Ultimately, you're setting them up to have them go back. So I'm kind of on it. I'm usually not on the fence about certain things, but that's one of those things where it's like, on one hand, I understand, and on the other hand, I'm like, that's not right, but I'm kind of mm-hmm. in the middle.
Deborah, you're not saying, and certainly no one's advocating, that no one pay restitution for their crimes. What you're saying is the system is broken and abusive. Go ahead.
Right. I don't think you're ever going to find anybody that's going to say, I just want to go to prison and I want to walk out the door and I don't want to ever have to pay anything.
Of course.
That's not what our argument is. You know, most people come home and if you're on the right track and you want to do the right thing, you're going to figure out a way to make your payments. What we're saying is, while we're trying to rebuild our lives and get our lives back together and slowly make these payments, money owed because of a mistake made long ago should not stop me from getting my driver's license,
mm-hmm.
because that's going to stop me from moving ahead in my life. And it damn sure shouldn't mean that I cannot vote.
That's right.
I mean, whatever the judge rules, and that's what the judge rules. Like, we have to give most respect to that. We can't go and do our time and come out and say, it's ridiculous I have to pay all of this money. Because, mm-hmm. you know, that's just not what our argument is. But we should not have to pay to vote.
Mm.
My punishment was to go to prison. My punishment was to be removed from every single thing and person that I loved on this earth. I was removed from everything. I was not a part of society. I came home, and I'm still paying a deep price. Even though, of course, I'm going to make my payments. I mean,
of course.
I'm not going to leave all of that stuff trailing behind me. But should I have to pay all of this money before I can get a driver's license? Should I have to pay money to get on a payment plan? Because I'm paying for the payment plan.
Mm.
I'm paying for, like, the plan itself.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm already paying back all of this money and thousands of dollars in interest while I sat in prison and worked like a dog for free. So we maintain those prisons, us, the incarcerated person. And still we walk out the door, and we don't have a problem paying these monies. The whole argument is these monies should be completely separate from our right to vote.
Mm-hmm. So I want
to
encourage
vote should never be a dollar on that for anybody anywhere.
Mm. I want to encourage our listeners to join this conversation. If you have any questions for Deborah Bennett, just give us a call at 410-319-8888. That's the number to join our conversation. Deborah Bennett Austin is the co-founder of Change Comes Now in Florida. She has been advocating for women, formerly incarcerated women and girls, and really has become an extraordinary advocate and champion for the incarcerated community. We want to hear from you. If you have a question, just give us a call. Join the conversation. And interestingly enough, in Maryland, I remember I was working for the mayor of the city. I remember the fight to get voting rights restored for felons. And I know so many felons who are not voting. And when I asked them, I said, do you know what blood, sweat, and tears went into restoring these civil liberties, these rights to you? They just don't care. Now, a lot of them do. A lot of people are exercising their right. A lot of them are celebrating their right. A lot of people are participating in the process. I wish everybody who had the ability to vote, especially when you think of those who have been are being denied the right to vote, you should be in line for however long it takes to cast your vote. 410-319-8888. Damon is on the line. Damon, welcome to Two Way Talk.
I think you're saying Damon.
Damon. Well, I'm sorry. I apologize.
That's okay. Long.
You're on the air, sir. Go ahead.
I'm on the air?
Yes, you are. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Of course, while waiting, some of what I was going to say is being covered.
Uh-huh.
I think that who really needs to be listening and taking heed is the entire community of non-voters.
Yeah.
And especially in our community, we cannot, if we don't vote, the chips fall where they may.
Mm-hmm.
It could be my son. It could be my mom. It could be my dad. It could be my cousins. If they're not allowed a chance to make it, and that's what's happening, is once they get out, the chance to make it, you take their legs and you ask them to walk.
Whew.
If that is the situation, it is not just all people who have been to jail and getting out.
Mm-hmm.
It's our entire community. It's Bobby next door to me who's really weak and not knowing the society because he's been in jail for 10 years. It doesn't mean that he won't get weak and do something else. So it is our responsibility as a community to keep Bobby strong.
Mm-hmm.
Because who knows? I'm next door. He could get weak enough and it could be my residence.
That's right.
The responsibility that she's talking about belongs to the entire community because unless we're the ones that are making the change, then the change will not happen for them. And then if it's not for them, it's for us because it takes all kinds to make a world.
Damon, you are 100% right. You are on it. Thank you for calling and sharing your perspective with us. 410-319-8888. That's the number to join our conversation. Deborah Bennett Austin, I'm curious, what was your life like before you were incarcerated?
I was a single mother.
Mm-hmm.
I had two small children. Didn't do anything wrong. Broke my arm. Never did any drugs or anything in high school. You know, silly little cheerleader debate kind of girl.
Mm-hmm.
Got addicted to pain pills. My fault, 100% my fault. Had a great doctor. The doctor no longer wanted to give me prescriptions. I started putting them in myself. And that spiraled my little downfall. I became addicted to hydrocodone. Before that, I was just a single mother, working, productive single mother.
Mm. And what were you serving time for?
The charge of trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
So in the state of Florida, my arrest was picking up a fraudulently called in prescription of 60 hydrocodone pills.
Mm.
But in the state of Florida, that's equivalent to having, say, a bucket full of heroin. It's 25 years to life in prison. Because one pill, they take the 650 milligrams of aspirin,
mm-hmm.
and they add it with the 10 milligrams of controlled substance. Because it's the combination, the derivative, the mixture, everything in the pill is counted as weight.
Mm-hmm.
So one prescription of 60 Lorset is equivalent to 39 grams, which is punishable by 25 years to life in prison.
My God. Wow. Folks, give us a call. Join our conversation. Deborah Bennett Austin's with us, co-founder of Change Comes Now, 410-319-8888. Let's go to Roscoe. Roscoe, I appreciate you calling. Welcome to Two Way Talk.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Hey.
Listen, I'm so glad that I heard the previous caller, Damon, call in. He hit the exact keys that I was going to touch
mm-hmm.
on. You know, this situation is an example of of why, you know, when some people, I go up, I just get paranoid when I hear people say, well, I'm not going to register to vote.
Yes.
Just because I don't like Trump, I'm not going to register to vote. If I don't like, you know, Brandon Scott, I'm not going to register to vote. These laws that the lady is bringing to our attention, while they are so heinous, what, how are they able to be there on the books? Because they were laws. How are you going to change them? You got to change them by voting to change those laws, or either voting to
eliminate
or replace those politicians that's keeping those laws in effect. And so voting is so important. It's not just about the national, international candidates or issues. It's about the day-to-day aspects of our lives. And if we don't take part, you know, then it's hard for us to complain. Now, the flip side of that is maybe the people that are in support of those laws are saying, well, the people in Florida, they have voted and they have spoken, and they are in favor of those laws. We don't know that. I don't know that. Let me put it like that.
Mm-hmm.
However, but if you don't register to vote, you can't take part in changing some of these laws that's egregious and that's ridiculous.
And I don't understand, Roscoe, you just made such an invaluable point. I have heard people who have said to me, I am not participating in the voting process because I don't like so-and-so. I don't like Trump. I don't like Biden. I don't understand how you divorce yourself from the process. So politics really is more than a person. It's about policy. It's about issues that affect our everyday lives.
It dictates how we live our lives, the little things in our community, how many traffic lights, how many speed cameras, all those things, the day-to-day, you know, the arrest rates and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I just wanted to say that, and I'm just so glad Damone brought it out to everybody's attention before I did, and just want to, you know, hit those keys again. That's why people should register to vote. You don't have to vote in the national elections if you don't want to. But if you're not registered to vote, you can't vote to change those laws that's affecting the day-to-day people's lives like this lady is talking about.
That's right. Thank you so much, Roscoe. I appreciate it. You know, it's interesting that people get so angry and so indignant about politicians, but they don't realize that unless you're involved in the process, you can't change the process. Unless you are involved in voting, you can't really have an impact on the process. 410-319-8888. Deborah, you have ignited something. The phone lines have lit up. People want to engage in this conversation. I do want to ask you, before we run out of time, about the Department of Justice report that talked about the conditions at a correctional center in Florida. Can you tell us about this report?
Sure. So that report was based on Lowell Correctional, which is in Ocala, Florida. It's one of the largest women's prisons in the United States. And there's always accusations of abuse, whether it be physical, sexual, mental. There's always something coming out of that prison.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived at that prison. I did my last 5 years there, and I was transferred through it several times. It's a terrible place. Prison's not supposed to be, you know, unicorns and rainbows.
Of course.
It's tough because you're removed from your people, but it doesn't mean that you can be raped in a corner where there's not a camera, or you can beaten like we gave the name Cheryl Wymar. So we had a lot of communications with the Department of Justice. I provided them hundreds of names. They came down. They met with us over the weekend. They entered the actual prison compound on a Monday. So you've got the United States Department of Justice walking on a compound. We've given them all of these names, and they're walking into the dorms to meet with these women whose names we provided. And the women gave us their names, like, yes, I want to speak to them.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a female warden at that time, so you would think there would be a little
of
bit of
course.
Empathy coming from her.
Mm-hmm.
There was not. We had to get staff removed off the compound. They were making comments to the women that morning, like, listen, watch what you guys say, because they leave at 5, and I'm still going to be here. And as the DOJ started entering the dorms and calling out women's names to to, you know, take them in a private room and speak with them. But the warden was jotting down their names behind them, or the staff members were jotting down their names. So people, of course, were afraid to talk. But even with all of the fear that was on that compound, with the, you know, the, like, the 3,500 women that were there, the DOJ entered, they just last December put out, like, about a 36-page report, and they affirmed everything that we've been saying. And it's a scathing report. I mean, it's horrifying. People that have no interest at all in incarceration, it touched them, and it pissed them off. It made them mad that these things were happening.
Mm-hmm.
And even with a power report like that, there has been zero change at this institution.
What?
Zero. Nothing. I've been on the phone with reporters all day before this call, and right before you guys called me, I had an attorney call me from Pennsylvania, and she read me an email from a young woman that was in fear for her life, and the lawyer was calling me to ask me what should I advise her to do. It is an unbelievable place where a bunch of women and children sleep every night, and you never know what's going to happen. So while people want to portray them as monsters, I get emails yesterday, an officer passed out in her officer station on Saturday, and the incarcerated women, they're the ones that saved her. They're the ones that beat on the glass and raised their little tablets to get staff members and did sign language to a dorm that was a half a football field away to get those women's attention, to get their sergeant, to get help to help this officer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's even with a power report like we have,
nothing
changed. So just like every single one of your callers have said, everybody has to vote.
Yes.
Because we the people, we are the power. We should be able to stand strong and say, you're not making correct, you're not doing things right, you're not making the right laws, you're not doing what you said you were going to do, so we're simply just going to vote you out. You can do what you said you were going to do, you can pass these votes that your people believe in, or we're simply going to vote you out.
Mm-hmm.
But by these leaders having select people voting and making it damn near impossible for anybody that might oppose them vote, where the power is not the people. And the power remains with the people that are in office right now, and it's not supposed to be like that. We try to challenge our governor and say, you know, we're going to vote you out, but then they flip Amendment 4 and they appeal it and it gets appealed again and we win and we lose and we win and we lose. And you never know where you stand here. But these gentlemen are correct. If you have the right to vote, if you have the power to vote, if you're legally allowed to vote, then vote, because change does not come with one or two votes. Change, it takes numbers.
Yep.
I live this every day. It takes numbers. You've got to vote. Don't vote for who your neighbor likes. Don't vote for who you think looks better on camera. Vote who you know is going to make a change, a positive change.
Let's go back to the phones. We have a lot of calls. We only have a couple of minutes left. Let's try to get in as many calls as possible. I understand someone's holding on line one. I don't see a name up here, but let's go to Donna. Donna, welcome to Two Way Talk.
How you doing, Anthony?
Doing well.
Great, and you have excellent guests you have on. I wanted to ask your guests, and this is one thing I like to recommend. I'm studying the mental health behavior, and one of the things that's a big problem, one of the problems I'm seeing across the country, especially these red states, is you have people who suffer from sociopathic behavior. And the governor in Florida has that trait.
Yes.
In Arizona, you can go down. Texas is one. And years ago, I got a book called The Sociopath Next Door. And what the psychologist said was that they're coming out. They infested our employment jobs, and they were our supervisors. Now they're moved up in government. Now they're in our state legislatures. And now they're in our federal level. In the congressional level. And this young lady is going to have to, and this is what I'm going to recommend for her. She's going to have to get on board on her organizations, industrial psychologists and people who specialize in sociopathic behavior. Because if you want to beat the system, you want to understand how they think, you have to have people who are specialty in that area, so that you can understand how to play that game of chess with them.
Donna, what a great idea. What a great idea. Go ahead.
If you don't put people who understand the type of mental illness that these people have, you're going to continue to fight this endless battle. That the incarceration system was set up 100 years ago to make money by the corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And when we ask former incarcerated people to vote, we have to also, and those who do, we have to go back to history. We have to tell them the history of why they set the system up. And mm-hmm. I can tell you for one thing that I researched, when they used to sterilize the feeble-minded people, and when they couldn't sterilize feeble-minded people, when they stopped sterilization, which was eugenics, when they stopped that, made it illegal,
mm-hmm.
the wealthy corporations had to find another system to put them in jail, and they found the penal system to make money. So that's where they're putting what they call the genetically messed up people, whoever, however they define them. So they created our penal system, and they threw all our people and whoever they want in there. So
we have a lot of people holding, so I've got to move on. Deborah, did you want to respond to that?
Thank you so much, Donna. I totally agree with the behavior that you said with our elected officials, mm-hmm. namely our governor, and I will take heed to your advice. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Let's go to Ayanna. Welcome to Two Way Talk.
Hello.
Hey there.
Hello, everybody. I'm an educator in Baltimore City, and I just wanted to talk about what you all feel is the root of the issue in terms of like what we can instill in our young people. I actually teach African American studies at my school. I elected to teach that as an enrichment.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually did a lesson with students about the school to prison pipeline and all those things. But I think it's important if we were to, because this quarter coming up, I want to talk to them about like basically civil rights organizations that have existed. And then I have a project where they create their own. And I feel like if they could know, you know, what we're talking about here in terms of how it's structured, the system mm-hmm. is, and what are the, because most of the time, right, when we talk about history, we're talking about past.
That's
issues,
right.
Right. But if they could know, like, what's happening now, and again, also, like, with this conversation around voting, you know, I don't really remember in social studies and whatnot really having a conversation about my, you know, as a young person, my importance I got to the age of 18 to vote. I didn't vote, to be honest with you, until Obama ran.
Wow.
That is the first time I ever stood in that long line to vote. But mm-hmm. prior to that, I didn't really understand, you know, how important my voice was. So I'm asking you guys about the root. Like, I think that this needs to start much earlier than mm-hmm. adulthood. You know, for us instilling this in our young people, especially our young people of color. So, yeah, just wanted to talk about the root of that. And Ms. Deborah, is there a site or whatnot that
yep.
we could go, that I could go visit to see and basically be able to impart this to students about what's happening at this juncture?
Yes, thank you.
Ayanna, thank you so much. Deborah, give out your website. How do people learn more about your organization?
About what's happening at this juncture?
Ayanna, thank you so
much.
All right. We're having a problem with Deborah's line, so we're going to pull her up and try to get it reestablished. I do want to say what Ayanna said is so important. My mother took me to vote with her every time she went to vote. I was 6 and 7, 10, 11, going to the voting polls with my mother. She would tell me, oh, well, you remember we saw the information about so-and-so, and we saw such-and-such information about this. I'm going to vote for him, and this is why. She turned it into a learning process for me. And we have to, as Ina said, we must explain the importance of every individual vote. And when you turn 18, why it's important that you become part of the process. It's very important you become part of the process. Let's go to Diane. Diane, welcome to Two Way Talk.
Good afternoon. How you
hey,
doing?
Diane. Great to talk to you.
You too. This is a good subject. You know, I look at it like it's a whole family situation.
Mm-hmm.
When one person gets incarcerated, the whole family is incarcerated. I don't care if people don't look at it that way. I do. Because we, as family members of them, the collect calls come to us, right?
Yep.
Because we don't turn them away because we don't want them to be...
Of course.
Like they are, you know, they're already isolated.
Mm-hmm.
So we take those calls. So I'm saying that the whole family is incarcerated. And it should be somewhere where the whole family get the therapy even before that person come out, you know, to even navigate, help them when they come out on the outside
mm-hmm.
of things that they don't know because time has passed. They might have 10 or 20 years. Time has changed since they've been out. So it should be like where it's navigated for the people that are family members and friends or neighbors that want to help that person. Because I think the recidivism in our community keeps being repeated. So we have to try something new, Anthony. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I sure do.
You know, because it's a saying that you keep repeating the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to change that. We need to embrace them. You know, and if they keep repeating, just cut them off.
Because
yep. I told my son, if he went back, don't call me, don't ask me to come. I'll come when I feel like it.
Mm.
That stopped him. Because he knew that I was not playing. I'm not coming. I'm not keep coming there. No.
Yeah.
You have your freedom. You was brought up a different way. You don't have to do what the crowd do. And that's what I was taught. I don't mm-hmm. know about nobody else. We were taught that, you know, you was a separate person from your friends. So you have to separate your friends. Sometimes you have to cut them off and get new friends until you get somebody that mm-hmm. is loyal to you or in going in the same direction you are going in life. You know, they might not be in the same field, but y'all have the same value system. You see what I'm saying?
Diane, we've got to run.
Okay, so
thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Let's try to get this final caller in. Helmsley, well, a new caller, welcome to Two Way Talk.
Yes, thanks very much, sir. Mm-hmm. Good afternoon to you and your guests. I happen to be doing a bit of research once. I had an RFP, you know, someone who sort of looked for some federal projects to work on as a consultant.
Uh huh.
And I was amazed at the amount of companies that were associated with the federal government, giving out contracts, utilizing prison services
uh-huh.
to do this work. So, you know, I just want to highlight this so that the public can see, though. There should be some law that forbid the federal government from issuing projects to private corporations and utilizing prisoners. If prisoners are going to work, they should be working on community projects.
Helmsley, unfortunately, we're out of time. I do want to get Deborah Bennett Austin a chance to tell us her website and how do people reach out to you.
So the website is Change Comes Now, FL, like for Florida. So Change Comes Now, FL.org. And that will introduce you to our board members. Mm-hmm. Everybody is formerly incarcerated. It'll also show you lots of pictures of our sisters that we deal with all the time. Show you things that are going on, and there's also a link that will get an email directly to me.
Deborah Bennett Austin, co-founder of Change Comes Now in Florida. Thank you so much. Thank you for the work you're doing. Thanks for the time you spent with us today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. It means a lot. And thank you to all the listeners.
Thank you. Let's go to Amy. She has our MTA report, and then we'll have a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
But good evening, folks. On my rail link, that my rail link, that my rail link, that.